What is Peace Brain? Peace Brain is the synergistic connection between our mental and emotional bodies, blending the electrical power of the mind with the magnetic force of the heart. Listen and explore how to create unity worldwide as we blend science and metaphysics, open our hearts and minds to the possibilities of peace on Earth, and create the life we are each destined for. Featured guests range from angel communicators to zoologists and everything in between. Now here is your host, Dr. Gail Lash.
Hello, welcome to the Peace Brain Show. This is your host, Dr. Gail Lash, and I'm happy to have you here today. Today I'm excited. We have a woman, Bianca Jensen, with us, and she's from New Zealand. And we're going to talk about the powerful topic of how do you move to a new country and really get into another culture, and of course how that relates to peace as well. And as always, with the Peace Brain Show, at the end of the show, we have a transformative meditation, so please stay tuned for that. So, but first, as I do on these Peace Brain Shows, I want to open with a quote. And this quote is from St. Augustine. It's a very short quote, but it's very powerful. And it says, "The world is a book, and those who do not travel read only a page." I really like that quote because it's true. The world is this amazing book with all these different cultures, diversity of humans and animals and geography and places. And if we only stay in one place, then we're only reading one page. And as you know, our company, Tourism for Peace, is all about that. It's about travel. It's about getting to know people around the planet and creating peace when we do get to know each other around the planet. So this quote today represents a lot not only about our company, Tourism for Peace, and also what Peace Brain is about, finding that peace inside and creating it in society, and how we can honor the diversity of human beings all over the planet, but also really about how we can move from place to place, from one country to another, and how we can be comfortable in a new culture. Now, sometimes cultures are very different. I know when I used to travel in the past to places like Ecuador and Indonesia, certainly a new language was involved, and new rituals, new cultures, new ways of living. And that, to me, is the beauty of the human species and where we are around the planet. But it does take some getting used to. And you don't have to be fluent in the language, of course, but that certainly is the best way to get to know someone, is to be able to speak the same language. Now, moving from one country to another that does have the same language still can present some challenges. I know when I've been over into England, the things, even though, of course, we're both speaking English, it still has some nuances and different ways of saying words and different meanings of words, and then different ways of the culture of being. For example, here in the United States, we drive on the right side, and in England, they drive on the left. So that was certainly a lot to get used to. So wherever we travel around the world, there are these amazing new differences, new ways of being that we have to get accustomed to and become comfortable with. And part of that, I think, is being comfortable in one's own skin, just being comfortable with being who we each are and knowing that, hey, I'm going to make some mistakes, I think, when I travel, and yet it's okay. And then being open to learning a new way of being and honoring it and getting into that culture and being respectful of that culture is so important. And that, of course, can help create a peaceful world. So I love St. Augustine's quote, "The world is a book, and those who do not travel read only a page." And today, that's really what our show is about. It's about traveling the world and Bianca Jensen's experience on coming from one English-speaking country to another English-speaking country and the diversity and the interest of what it is she has been through to adapt to a new country, even though the language is the same. So let me give you a little history on Bianca, and then I will bring her on the show. She is from New Zealand, as I said. She moved to the United States about a year ago. And in university, she studied geology and sociology, and then worked as emergency management for 2 years after university. She grew up in Hawke's Bay and then lived in Wellington, the capital of New Zealand, for a while. And she, one of her other talents is conference organizing as well, and we'll talk about some about that. So, as I said, she's here to talk about what is New Zealand, what it's like to be a Kiwi, a New Zealander, and then her experience in moving to the United States. And hopefully you listeners will get some wonderful practical tips and just maybe light up some of your experiences in your life and encourage you as well to travel if you have not. So I want to welcome Bianca onto the show. Hi, Bianca. Welcome to the Peace Brain Show today.
Hi, dear.
Good to have you on the show.
Yes, it's good to be here. Thank you for inviting me on.
You're very welcome. So let's get started and talk. I'd love to hear a little bit about what your life growing up in New Zealand was like. Tell us a bit about that. I've been meaning to travel there, but I have not. So enlighten us about it.
That's cool. So I was really lucky to grow up. I lived in Hawke's Bay, which is like wine country for anybody who's a big fan of wine. And I lived there until I was 5 and then moved back when I was a teenager. And then in between that, when I was probably from about 5 until 12, I was really lucky to be able to grow up and live on the Coromandel Coast, which is, like, in my opinion, probably the prettiest part of New Zealand. I used to live right next door to a beach. Like, I literally, my house, I crossed the road, there was a small park, and then I went straight onto the beach. So I got to grow up making sandcastles, like playing with crabs and seeing anemones and all fun things like that. It was pretty awesome, like, especially looking back at it now. My primary school was actually on the beach as well. So I remember, when I was growing up, going to school, we used to go down, like, in our lunch break and stuff, and just play on the beach, make sandcastles, like, chase seagulls, just have a whole fun time. Like, I don't know if the school's still like that, because I know things have changed a little bit, probably a little bit more careful with, kids around sea and water and things like that nowadays. But, it was definitely an amazing, amazing childhood upbringing. So,
wow,
yeah, I'm very, very lucky with that.
What a great opportunity. Who wouldn't want to have their school on the beach? Oh, my.
That's
great for the teachers, actually, to just say, go out and play in nature and have fun.
Yeah,
wow.
Absolutely. It was a pretty, pretty interesting time growing up, and I got to visit some of the other, like, amazing places in Coromandel. Like, I travelled quite a lot. Like, I went back to Napier quite often. We did quite a bit of travelling when I was younger, which I was lucky about, just for weekends or visiting family and things. But yeah, no, it was a lot of fun. Definitely a lot of fun. So
then you said you moved to Wellington. How old were you then?
So I moved to Wellington. I actually moved to Wellington 3 times and then moved away. So I moved first when I was 13 with my mum, and then I just stayed there a year that time. And then straight after high school, I moved to Wellington again for a few years, and then moved back to Hawke's Bay. So I've done a bit of moving around in my life so far. And then finally, I moved back there. Would have been about 8 years ago now, I think. Yeah, and so that was sort of the final time. And if I, like, well, when I do move back to New Zealand, I'll probably definitely move back to Wellington. It's now, I sort of, when I explain my hometown, I always say Hawke's Bay because that was where I grew up and where I was born and everything. But Wellington's definitely become my home as well. So, yeah.
So tell us a little bit about Wellington. You said it's the capital. Tell us about what it looks like or what we would expect if we were to visit.
Okay, cool. Yeah. So for a capital city, especially compared to a lot of US cities, it's still quite small. Like we've got, I think it's 500,000 people, and that's in like the greater Wellington region. So the city itself is a bit smaller, but it's still the second biggest city in New Zealand. So it's quite like, it's our country, like New Zealand only has about 4.8 million people, which is, I think, the whole Georgia region. So so a little bit different sizing and stuff, but
well, if we want
cool.
to compare it, Atlanta, which we're speaking from at the moment, Atlanta, Georgia has 5 million people in it. So
yeah.
It sounds like the city,
yeah.
the greater Atlanta is the same population as the whole country of New Zealand.
New Zealand, absolutely.
Wow.
Very, very bizarre, but it's cool. It's, yeah. And so Wellington, it's a really, really, it's a really good city. Like, it's got a lot of art, a lot of culture, a lot of forward thinking. Like, I've actually read somewhere that it's in the top 10 for best coffees in the world. So that's definitely something to to brag about a little bit. So, yeah, we've got, there's a big cafe culture, like people going out and having like lattes and things like that. So it's, yeah, it's really, it's got a really good atmosphere. And the centre city is quite compact. So like most cities, you've got to travel quite a bit to the different areas. But Wellington, you can probably walk from one end to the other in probably about 20 minutes or half an hour, maybe an hour if you go like the full circle around it. But yeah, it's pretty small, but it's quite nice because that means you walk down the street, and like so many times I walk down the street and I know like 3 or 4 people. So it's quite a nice little community feel as well.
That sounds beautiful. So is that then, it has a lot of different companies and federal organizations, or who else, what other companies kind of are there? In other words, it's a economic center as well, as you said, the second largest city in the country.
Yes.
What would one find there besides the arts?
So it's just like any regular city, like there's a lot of shops, a lot of businesses, and because we've got the government there, it's like that generates a whole lot of businesses. I don't know, there's a lot of banking, a lot of just pretty much like a regular city. Like we're not a huge hub like Atlanta. Like I'm just amazed at how much like Atlanta has going for it, in the sense of like huge like headquarters for like really big companies and things. But like our biggest city in New Zealand, Auckland, that's about 1.5 million. That's probably got more of the like the bigger companies, like the headquarters and all the rest of it. So I think the main thing that Wellington has going for it in the terms of like business and everything else would be because we've got like the government there. And so like things that need to be close to the government, or it's just in their best interest to be, that's what we get, like a lot of things coming out of that. So yeah.
Great. That makes sense.
Yeah.
So you studied geology and sociology. What university did you go to, and what drew you to those departments, those topics?
So I went to Victoria University. Yes, I think it's one of the best universities in New Zealand. Like, there's only about probably eight of them, so, like, not, so it's not really anything big. But, I decided to do geology firstly because I worked for a few years before I started studying. And, like, one of the things that I enjoyed most was working outdoors, so I did a lot of gardening, landscaping, just general outdoor things. And so I decided that, like when I was trying to look for a job, I kind of had realized at that stage that instead of just studying because you think a subject's good or interesting, or you've asked actually to look at what you'll be doing day to day, like while you're working. And I wasn't really a huge fan of working in an office. I tried that before, and it was fine. I think I needed more movement, like to get out and do things a little bit more. I actually started at Vic thinking that I wanted to do environmental science, because I'm like a huge advocate of like the environment. And definitely know that we need to, like, take good care of it. And I was quite interested in some of the, like, sustainability things that are coming out now. But when I went there, I talked to people, and they mentioned that geology was probably a really good, solid, major to have, because there was just probably more jobs in it. You could make a reasonable income if I wanted to go down that path. I don't know, there just seemed to be more options doing geology. So I chose that. And then I've always been interested in the humanities. Like, I started studying actually in Napier earlier on, and I started doing a applied social sciences degree. But then I realised that I didn't probably want to do as applied work. So when I moved to Wellington, I decided that I still wanted to keep some of that. And I'm really interested in society, like in people. Like, probably one of my biggest passions is actually just seeing how people tick, the reasons behind it, like pretty much just understanding people. And so while I wanted to do geology as a sort of maybe a long-term step, saying, okay, because that will get me outdoors, give me more, maybe more employability, I want to do sociology just for my own sake, really. Just, and I loved it. Like, I probably, an enjoyment standpoint, I definitely enjoyed sociology more. But there's also a lot of good things coming out of geology too. So, yeah.
Well, it sounds like the two can be combined. In other words, if you talked about the environmental science or the way that people use the environment, that gets into both the sociology and the natural sciences, which geology, of course, is part of it as well. So did you look into that kind of... It sounds like that maybe got into your disaster management or emergency management, but we'll talk about that in just a minute. But did you look at how to combine the geology and the sociology and kind of the way people use the environment or not?
I actually hadn't thought about that, but that's actually a really good track to go down. Because, it's true, actually quite interesting having, like, the background, like, actually understanding the dimensions of, like, the earth and, like, the practical stuff around it, but also being able to understand the people. And because I'm really interested, so I'm interested in environmental issues and considering, like, going into the environment, like, into environmental sustainability fields, like, work-wise.
Which we all need, and there's going to be a huge industry in the future. I mean, that's the way we're going as a society, world society as well.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I think that's so, like, so important and so good, like, especially learning more about geology, like, just, like, actually realising, like, you kind of realise how long it takes to to create all the things, like, takes, like, so many years to create oil and all the rest of it. And, like, all the minerals and things, like, can take thousands and thousands, millions of years in some cases for things. And, like, just as you're realizing that it's everything's finite like that. So, no, it's yeah, that's true. I never thought about it that way, but it's great.
So tell us a little bit about how you got into the emergency management then.
So I was quite lucky because, like, near the end of my degree, throughout the whole degree, I was looking to try and find some, like, work experience. We don't have as many, like, internships in New Zealand. Like, it's not really our culture. It's more you do the degree, usually just work in a restaurant or, like, some kind of job that's not really related to your field. Some people are lucky enough to, but they're definitely not as high, high in demand or as able, like, people aren't able to do them as much in New Zealand as here. So I just, like, through the whole degree, I was looking for, like, some kind of opportunity to get work experience because after, like, being in, like, working before my degree, I realised that getting a job afterwards is not as easy as you sort of assume if you've never actually done the process before. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, so I decided that I wanted to try and find some work experience, and I was lucky enough to, one of my professors gave me an email address for this company called GNS Science, which stands for Geological and Nuclear Sciences, and that's a crown entity, which is, like, part government and part for-profit, so they, and it's a really, really strong and really good, organisation in New Zealand. And so I just sent my CV out, or we call them CVs instead of resumes, so I sent my resume out to people, like, to one person who circulated it throughout his organisation, and I was really lucky enough to get a really awesome person that needed some work. It was only probably about a 2-month-long contract, and I was making these little plastic models, and we're testing deformation. So he was putting them under, like, in a stress on a machine that kind of, sorry, it's a bit difficult to explain, but it presses down on the models, and then you see how the fractures propagate. So mm-hmm. It was a lot of fun. Like, it was a great little environment down. It's called the Vock Lab. And it was quite funny. I just cut out and made these plastic models, use chloroform to stick them all together, which was an interesting experience too. so it was quite funny. And then after that finished, I realised that doing straight geology probably wasn't me completely. Like, I need more people interaction. And I realised then that I wanted to sort of bring some of the humanity side into it. So I talked to some people around the organisation, and there was a humanities-based department within GNS Science. And I talked to some awesome people there who yet again circulated an email around saying I was interested in work, like part-time whatever, and then there was a project that needed doing with the data analysis. And so I was able to do that over the summer months after I finished my degree. So
explain what the data analysis was about.
So data analysis, it was people had, like, created and sent out surveys sometimes it was emergency managers, like first responders. It was just, like, a whole variety of people that were part of the whatever disaster looking like. At that time, it was a specific volcanic eruption just a small scale one, but still they just wanted to use that as just to get more data on it and to figure things out. And so I took the surveys, like, and put it into a specific computer system, which I mean computer program, SPSS. Yeah. So it was pretty much just like making the data readable and understandable to everyday people. So that was a really interesting and a really good skill that I've now got.
So to recap, you basically, you at first were looking at stress management, stress fractures on the Earth, like that would, on these models, et cetera, what would cause the stress. And then you moved into these different surveys for first responders and emergency management personnel to see if, as an example, there was a volcanic eruption, how they would respond and what would need to be done for the general populace, and analyzing all of those data to make it understandable of how that could work better than for the system?
Yeah, absolutely. Cool. That's absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. So, oh, that's really interesting. Were there others then, other scenarios that people came up with, like a tsunami or earthquakes, or I mean, you may not have worked on them, but is that the way disaster management works?
Yeah, like it's an incredible field. It's over the last 20 years or so, or maybe a little bit longer, but over the last little while, things have just changed so much, and it's amazing, like the different scope. Like there's so many people. Especially during their PhDs or masters or postdoctoral like staff, who just look into all these different things. Like there's a few amazing things which have come out. Like you mentioned tsunamis, on one of the conferences that I helped out at, they were talking about this new way, like this new thing, which was absolutely simple and probably the best, like, logical and practical thing that that people can do with tsunamis. And they ended up in one of the places in Wellington, Island Bay. There's it's kind of a cove, and so if there is an earthquake, there's logically there will be a tsunami afterwards, and there's definitely been recordings of the tsunamis. And so, like, in certain areas in Island Bay, it can be quite dangerous, like, not short-term but long-term dangerous, like, because we never know when the earthquake or a tsunami is going to happen. So they ended up drawing actual lines on the streets around Island Bay. Like they made a computer model, and like depending on the they predicted the biggest sized earthquake, which would create the biggest tsunami, and they've actually drawn lines on the streets around Island Bay because it's very, very hilly in Wellington. And so they're saying if you want to be safe, get above this line. So it's just a really practical thing that actually gives people something concrete to do. So say that you hear there's a tsunami, you automatically know that you just need to get as far up the hill and to this line, and then no matter what, you'll be safe. So
wow,
yeah,
that's fantastic.
Yeah, so
you're right. That is very practical and very good to know.
Absolutely. So there's things like that, which I don't know. It's just there's new things coming out all the time, and I think people are starting to realise more and more how important like interacting with the community and just actually. Getting the input from just everyday people, because amazing how if you collaborate together, you get some of the best ideas. And what that actually came from, I think it was a meeting with the Wellington Regional Emergency Management Office and a group of the public. And so somebody just said, oh, it'd be great if we could draw a line around where the tsunami affected area is, and then that just stuck. So, you know, it's pretty cool. But yeah, there's like in New Zealand too, I was quite lucky because we're like right on a tectonic plate. Like the Ring of Fire goes right through New Zealand. We're on two tectonic plates. So there's a lot of volcanic activity. Like we haven't really had many big volcanic eruptions recently that actually affected people like badly or anything. But it's just a whole spectrum of like disasters, I suppose. Or yeah, so we've got like these volcanoes, tsunamis. We get flooding on a like regular basis, but yet again, because it's reasonably regular, there's good things in place, so it doesn't actually, it's not a catastrophe usually. Yeah, definitely a lot of earthquakes. In Wellington, this is just a random fact that people might enjoy. I think somewhere in Wellington, like near our National Museum, which is called Te Papa, there's this plaque that says that every minute Wellington has an earthquake. So most of them are so small you can't feel them. But that's how crazy it is. It's pretty cool though. It's pretty cool.
That's pretty amazing. I know when I lived in Los Angeles, we had earthquakes, but it wasn't that frequently, or at least we didn't feel them. And we think that California has so many earthquakes, but oh my goodness, sounds like New Zealand has so much more. But of course, they're both on the Ring of Fire, so you're right.
Yeah,
oh my goodness.
Yeah.
So, anything else you want to tell us about New Zealand before we start talking about the United States?
Not really. Not particularly. Yeah.
I know it's a beautiful place to visit. And many, many films are, you know, movies are filmed there for their beautiful scenery. You've got so many wild places that are just gorgeous. So let's talk about the difference in the United States. You came here about a year ago, and coming from an English-speaking country to another English-speaking country, that's obviously a similarity, but describe for our listeners a little bit about the difference in the cultures of the United States and New Zealand.
Okay, cool.
What has been a challenge for you or a little bit different that you thought, wow, this is interesting?
Yeah. So there's, because a lot of people ask me, like, what are the differences and things, and it's really strange, but it's a lot of subtle differences. So there are things that I don't actually realize at first, and then after a while it just sort of hits me. So there's little differences, like the first time I went to a supermarket, and even now when I go to a supermarket, I kind of look around and I just get slightly confused, because like it's when you've been brought up with specific brands and things like that, you kind of know what's a good brand, what's not. Like you understand a bit of the basics, and then like going to a supermarket, I'm like, I'm so confused, like what's good. Like even, you know, it's very bizarre, but I found out that a lot of bread in the US tastes sweeter than it does in New Zealand. I've only tried like maybe about four or five different brands, but it was one of the things. I'm like, just little things, and it's like, that's fine, it's good bread.
well, like, I think we add sugar to our bread, you know, which is unfortunate actually, but a lot of the companies do that to get people to like their products, so
yeah,
that's an interesting difference, you're right.
Yeah, but it's, and so like, even, it was quite funny, like, even with the language thing, how we do both speak English. Like, when I first came here in particular, the thing I found the hardest, or it was actually quite funny, was that nobody could understand me. So I had to get my boyfriend to translate several times, well, more than several times, actually. So we were in a shop, or even with some friends and stuff, and they just kind of looked at me blank, and they're like, pardon? So, yeah, so, and I know I do speak fast, so I hope you all are following me. But,
well, and I think it's a matter of our ears getting used to the new accent, you know, to whomever is speaking, not just you, but anyone. The same
exactly.
thing with me when I go places, absolutely. Just getting used to that new way of how is that person toning their words and getting used to that, that's what they're saying.
yeah, absolutely. And, like, it was, and because I now have a lot more, I think, compassion for people. Like, because I had a lot of friends from overseas when I was back home in New Zealand. Like, probably about half my friends were from, like, all different countries. And I think now I have a lot, I have a lot more empathy for what they've gone through or what they're going through, just with the, just all the little differences and things like that.
What else did you notice besides the grocery store, the supermarket? And there's two words for the same thing right there.
there you go. Absolutely. Yeah, that was another thing I was going to say. Different words, like I sometimes say things and people are like, what was that? Which it's just like the different ways of using English, like, and even some spellings different. Like, I've got to definitely watch that when I'm sending out, like, work emails and things like that, or to make sure that I'm using it the American way so people don't think that I'm just misspelling things. So, but some other differences. I'd say culturally, like, one of the biggest things I've found is Americans, or just in general, from what I've kind of experienced, is that people can be a lot more assertive. Like, in New Zealand, we don't really want to stir the pot. We sort of, well, and that's a generalisation. Like, there's obviously people that are, like, all different ways and stuff like that. But in general, like, people don't really want to say if something's wrong. Like, you don't want to be too persistent because people will just take that as you're being, like, kind of overstepping your boundaries and being a bit frustrating and annoying. And and so, yeah, it's really funny. And then coming here, like, I actually love it. Like, I love it how people are a lot more upfront. And if somebody doesn't like you, or not somebody doesn't like you, but if somebody has an issue, much more likely people will actually say something rather than it just sort of festering under the surface. And I think that's a real strength. So that's one of the big differences I found. And, like, at the moment I'm, like, job searching, and that's one of the things that I'm kind of, like, I'm trying to navigate, is that instead of kind of stepping back, like, kind of putting a resume out there and then stepping back, I actually need to consistently follow up and be a bit more assertive and actually follow through, like, on a much more regular basis than I would back home. And to be honest, for me, I find that quite liberating, because it's not like this feeling that you want to do something but you can't. And here I'm like, I want to do something, and so I will.
So you can take action a little easier here in America when you want to do something, or when we're talking about things. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And maybe it was just me back home. I was a little bit more timid, so I didn't want to kind of push things too much. And maybe other people do, and that's like, but it's just interesting. So what other things? We talked a little bit about some differences. Can you remember any of the other ones that I mentioned earlier?
I know that the one, certainly, as you said, about following up with prospective employers or being that assertive is, and being, I won't use the word honest, that's not quite the right word, but more candid or more forthright, in what we, in promoting oneself and in being what you want and need and are good at and all of that is, as you were saying, is more of an American trait. Not that people don't do that in New Zealand, but it's quieter or it's less forceful. So as far as navigating a social network, I think you had mentioned because we are in Atlanta here in Georgia in the south, the southern part of the United States, you had mentioned something about hospitality.
Oh, yes, that's the other thing I was thinking about. It's been really, I've just been kind of blown away by I've been blown away by, like, the kindness and, the hospitality of almost strangers here. Like, it's really, really cool. Like, I mentioned before that I was just, like, job hunting and things, and so I was just sort of reaching out to just different people, or just even mentioning it in conversations, and so many people have just kind of jumped and been like, oh, okay, well, just what are you looking for? Give me, like, just I'll keep my eyes open for you. And people that I've met, like, once or, like, just had a few conversations with, it's just, it's blown me away, sort of the support here. Like, it's been amazing, actually. Like, I don't know. And maybe people recognise that I'm obviously not from here, and so want to help more and everything. But it's just been really amazing. So people have been definitely, Southern hospitality has made me feel very welcome. So that's great.
Awesome. Yeah. I'm glad we can be of service here in the South anywhere in the United States. But the South is stereotyped or known for its, quote, Southern hospitality. So that generally is true. It I'm sure other places as well, but certainly here in Atlanta, you see it. Yeah. I'm glad you've experienced it.
Yeah, that's great.
So we're getting towards the end of the show, time with you, before we do the Peace Brain Meditation. Any last things you want to say to people who travel or just the kind of the advantages of travel or what you might tell our listeners about all that?
So traveling, is, for me, like, that's probably, like, one of my main passions. Like, and I wanted to travel for years and years and years and never, like, went to Australia but never further afield, and it took me meeting pretty awesome man to get me to sort of take the huge leap to actually get out and get further afield. But I'd just say go for it. Like, it's so funny because even me here, it's like I've got all these things that I want to do. And I think it's actually just deciding to do it and doing it, because it's so easy. There's always excuses. There's always, like, reasons why not to, but it enriches your life so much. That's probably the only advice that I'd give. Just do it. Do Nike.
Just do it. Just travel to the places you want to go. Are there any other places you want to go besides, obviously, traveling around the United States? I know you had mentioned that before to me, that you want to get some more feeling for the rest of the United States, and you've been to Canada a bit, too, because you have friends there. But where else in the world would you like to go, just on your bucket list for the moment?
Pretty much everywhere. Like, I'd love to go to Africa, through Asia, Europe, obviously. Like, I just, closer now, I want to go, back to Central America and South America, and sort of stay there for longer. There's so many places that I want to go to. Like, I Yeah, I need to write them all down and then tick them off, cross them off, so hopefully I'll be able to do it. but yeah.
Fantastic. Well, I think you named almost every continent, so.
Yeah, absolutely. So I
definitely a world traveler, Diego.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, thank you so much for being on the Peace Brain Show today and sharing some of your experiences about your beautiful country, New Zealand, and about how it is to be in the United States, the subtle differences that we have culturally, and I really appreciate you being here.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, thank you very much for inviting me on too, Gail. It's been great.
All right. So now we're going to do our Peace Brain meditation. So I invite you to be comfortable and have to settle in your chair, be comfortable, and then take a breath. All right. And now let's imagine traveling around the world. You can close your eyes or keep your eyes open, but go ahead and think about your bucket list, where you want to be in the world and where you might want to travel. Where are those places that you want to experience? And think about the different cultures that you want to immerse yourself in. And it could be that they speak the same language as you. It could be that they're different. But take a look in your mind's eye about that country and that culture and start to feel happy. Really bring yourself in a moment of, yes, I am there. I can actually be in that culture. I've gotten the plane ticket and I've arrived in that country. And I'm walking around in that city, and I'm seeing the arts and the people and the clothing and the new foods and the smells of the place. And take a breath and really feel that you are there. Really feel that you are in that country and you are having that amazing experience. And now, if you're going to be there for a while, perhaps actually get a job and live there, rent an apartment, develop some relationships. Think about how you would do that. What kind of job would you want to have there? And it could be anything. It doesn't have to be necessarily what you were trained in or have a university degree in. It could be, wow, I've always loved to make bread, so I'm going to go work with a bread maker. Going to go work in a baker shop. It could be anything. What are some of your heart's desires that you have wanted to develop in your lifetime? Perhaps you can do them here. You can experience the culture. It's kind of like the book Eat, Pray, Love, where she simply experienced the cultures in those different countries. And take a breath. And again, smell the smells of the place that you're in. Hear the noises, the hustle and bustle of the people, the traffic, the language. And see the colors of the sunset and of the people going by, the different clothing. And feel the happiness in your heart of being able to actually spend some time here, not just as a tourist, but as a resident. And now, give yourself permission to actually become one of the people there, to see what it would be to live long-term there. And it doesn't mean you lose your identity of who you are or your upbringing of the country you're originally from, but that how can you immerse yourself actually in that culture? Think about how it would be to live there for days and days and years and develop a family or relationships and a community and friends. And take a breath and allow any fears to flow away, to disperse into the universe. And be content with living that lifestyle, with being there. how can you use your talents and gifts to be of service to that community? And again, take a breath. And now bring yourself back to your particular situation of where you are and whatever country you really are in. And ponder a bit, where do you want to live in the world? Where would you be of most of service? And perhaps it means traveling to several countries on your bucket list or several cities, because cities can be as different as countries as well, even if they're in the same country. Perhaps you still need to travel. You still need to explore. You still need to read that world book and turn those pages to find out about the different places to make that choice. Give yourself the opportunity to embrace the diversity of the human race and the way that we each live around the planet. Because all of them are valuable, and all of them make the beauty of the garden of what humanity has created on this planet. Each one is engulfed and connected to its particular geography, its particular lifestyle, its particular places on the planet, whether it be near an ocean or a mountain or the tsunamis or the earthquakes or just the gentle rolling hills. The way the earth changes is different in various places around the earth, and we have to experience it as human beings with that in mind. And so again, think about, where do I want to live? Do I like the ocean? Do I like the mountains? Where do I feel not only most comfortable, but really the happiest? And many times traveling is about getting out of your comfort zone. And so I invite you to do that, to look at how can you stretch yourself a bit? How can you find those multidimensionality of yourself? How can you stretch your personality and your talents to be of service in another community that may be different than yours? And of course, by traveling and learning to be with people from various countries and cultures, we do create peace on Earth, because suddenly those people are friends. We become them and they become us. So take a breath and allow yourself to expand your horizons and begin to think about travel in your life. Think about expanding who you are and what you can contribute to this world. And as always, bringing yourself back to the room and taking the breath, opening your eyes, I want to thank you today for tuning into the Peace Brain Show. And remember, if you would like to connect with me, Dr. Gail Lash, for a private Alchemy of Peace coaching session, or if you'd like us to conduct a Peace Master Plan for your company or organization to become known as a place of peace, please do go to our website, tourismforpeace.com, or email me at hello@peacebrain.org. And I'm happy to take a few moments to learn about you and to see if our services can fit you on your next steps towards peace. And again, I want to thank our guest today, Bianca Jensen, for coming on to the Peace Brain Show. And you can find her on LinkedIn. And now, please go forth and activate your Peace Brain and put your mark on the World Peace Trails map. Many blessings. Namaste.
Thank you for joining us on the Peace Brain Show. You can find us at tourismforpeace.com. Be sure to check out Dr. Gail's Alchemy of Peace coaching sessions, her Peace Master plans for your business or organization, and her upcoming book, Peace Brain 101. Tune in to BBS Radio Station 2 every other Tuesday at 5 p.m. Pacific and 8 p.m. Eastern for the Peace Brain Show and your next installment of wonder, inspiration, and practical peace.